So our first talk is going to be Michael Sleesman, and he's going to give sort of a theological anthropology look at telepresence and remote medicine and things like that, which has really taken advantage of the advances in computing and communications that we've had in recent years. Michael? There's no microphone in there, so speak
okay.
If you can.
Okay, that's great. Well, good afternoon. By way of a few preliminaries, in case you don't know who I am, I'm a theologian by training. I've, for the last 12 years, worked as the managing director and research scholar at the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity, a Christian bioethics research center up at Trinity International University, just up the road in Deerfield. I've just recently transitioned to a faculty post in the bioethics department, so I'm taking on a slightly different role now. My work is generally framed under the rubric of bioethics, but my primary research emphases are in the realm of theological ethics and biotechnology and the ethics of emerging technologies. For our purposes this afternoon, I'll focus our attention on some of the recent developments in telepresence and telemedicine, robotic or otherwise, with an eye to theological engagement. To contextualize the presentation a bit, the last two sections will focus primarily on material that I've worked on developing a philosophy and theology of technology. I'm not going to develop that here for the purposes of our time together, but I'm happy to unpack that in Q&A, or frankly, you can just go to the CBHD's website, cbhd.org, and I've got a number of resources that have been published over the years on that there. Additionally, what I'm presenting this afternoon is only a portion of a much longer paper that I'm working towards publication. This has been something I've been doing for the last couple of years, so I'm skipping over several sections, so you'll notice that. I'll reference some of those materials as I'm moving along, but some of them I'm just leaving out altogether. And the last is my sincere apologies for not getting together a PowerPoint. I am just returned from a family funeral. My grandmother passed away earlier this week, so we had to make a sudden trip the last couple of days, and we just arrived back in town last night. So with those preliminaries aside, let me give you a brief roadmap of where we're going this afternoon. I'll begin with a brief technological genealogy sketching the emergence and evolution of telepresence and telemedicine. This will serve as an entrance into a broader discussion of a robust technology assessment for emerging technologies. I'll conclude by proposing theological resources, particularly from theological anthropology, that might guide and inform a Christian ethical engagement of such emerging technologies. So first, the first section, a technological genealogy, telepresence, telerobotics, and telemedicine. To say that we live in a scientifically and technologically sophisticated age seems at this point a serious understatement. Technology from all quarters of consumer electronics to medical technologies, advanced robotics, and information and communication technology infrastructures promise to improve the efficacy and ease of our lives, as well as to affect as yet unseen cost savings and overall quality improvements. So I don't have to keep referring to this long meme of information communication technologies. I'm just going to use the shorthand ICT, but that's what I'm referring to. By most accounts, the concept of telepresence emerges in the context of remote-controlled machines, and specifically telerobotics, and only more recently detours into the realm of ICT. At its base level, telepresence describes a technologically mediated presence or a remotely projected presence of an individual, often signifying the ability to interact in some capacity with the remote surroundings. While many sci-fi visions of autonomous robots may have sparked the literary imagination, much of the reality of robots until the fairly recent past has been marked by remote operation since at least the 1940s. In the 1950s, for instance, telerobotic systems were used for handling radioactive materials. One can also think of NASA coming on board later and moving on in its endeavors in interplanetary exploration. Telepresence took a significant leap forward through the evolution of ICTs. In the days of handwritten correspondence and even the development of the telegraph, for instance, no one confused the paper or electronic transfer of memes as presence. Though one might argue the letter had a more personal quality to it than the telegraph. With the invention of the telephone, suddenly a sensory experience of the individual, that is, hearing a voice, across great distance was possible. And with it, we have the first suggestions of technologically mediated presence. Developments in ICT, specifically the personal computer and much later mobile devices, laid the foundation for a more radical evolution in the concept of telepresence. Here I'm specifically referring to the emergence of virtual space, think the internet, and visual technologies such as video conferencing. With the emergence of the internet, analysis of this virtual space in any of its instantiations began to explore concepts of virtual presence, conceptually recasting the meaning and nature of embodied relations. To be sure, there were previous analogs in the era of pen pals, but the emergence of increasingly sophisticated ICTs led to a greater blurring of our concepts of real versus mediated communication, as well as the social construction of meaning and cultural practices around virtual reality, and the now necessary reference to real life. One thinks of the relatively quick evolution of digital communication from electronic bulletin boards to email chat rooms, instant messaging, blogging, texting, MySpace, Second Life, World of Warcraft, the whole variety of MMOs, Facebook, Skype, Twitter, Snapchat, and so on. Intriguingly, as these technologies have evolved, there is an increasing interest to privilege visual imagery over against text. It's in this context that Facebook's acquisition of Oculus Rift, a leading virtual reality device maker originally intended for the high-end gaming market, finds its significance. These technologically mediated interactions in virtual space have taken on profound cultural significance and social meaning for contemporary conceptions of human identity, human relations, social interaction, and embodied presence. Focusing our attention more specifically on telemedicine, we see that the emergence of telemedicine has happened, for the most part, without many of us paying attention. Precursor applications can be traced to the late 1800s and the physician use of telephones to contact drugstores, but that likely seems at best an overly broad use of the term. More recently, a 1996 report by the Institute of Medicine defined telemedicine as the use of electronic information and communication technologies to provide and support healthcare when distance separates the participants. The report notes that even by the 1990s, there was a wide range of competing definitions and conceptions for this cluster of technologies. The 1950s saw the formal emergence of the term telemedicine in reference to the early use of psychiatry of a form of two-way television for group therapy, in which diagnoses were given via videotaped recordings and satellite communication for rural healthcare in Alaska. Given use of low-bandwidth visual technologies in this first usage of the term, it's perhaps no surprise that the pioneering fields of telemedicine were some of the most visually oriented practices: dermatology, pathology, psychiatry, and radiology. And yet what may seem perplexing is that the arena of telemedicine, a now 50 or 60-year-old arena at that, hasn't evolved more quickly given the massive evolution in ICT as a whole. Certainly in the past decades, we have seen a paradigm shift to e-health. The rise in electronic medical records, electronic prescriptions, electronic patient management systems, big data, and precision medicine, along with the proliferation of medical information sites like WebMD. And these innovations have incrementally transformed the clinical encounter in subtle ways. Taken as a whole, they amount to a substantive paradigm shift in the nature and delivery of medicine, fundamentally altering the clinical encounter and the nature of the physician-patient relationship. The subsequent evolution of visual technologies and robotics has allowed for the arrival of remote video medical consults, such as those launched by the Mayo Clinic and others, expansion in the use of telemedicine for rural healthcare, and even the use of telesurgery devices, such as the Da Vinci system, which have become common for certain kinds of surgical procedures and can perform surgery remotely, even from great distances. Finally, an emerging area of robotics, including medical robots, care robots, and robot companions, expands the teleoperation model of certain surgical robots by expanding into the area of telepresence, allowing doctors to make bedside visits and perform consults remotely via these robotic avatars, also allowing for remote monitoring, and even potentially removing the need for human caregivers and human touch from the clinical encounter altogether. Lest we discard these potential developments as merely fanciful speculations, Due to its rapidly aging population, Japan is heavily investing in this area of research. The emergence of such options for the growing practice of telemedicine offers significant opportunities and challenges for traditional conceptions and practices of medicine, particularly with respect to historic emphases on the importance of therapeutic touch and the orientation toward the provision of whole person care, versus the emerging medical emphases on diagnostics and intervention that telemedicine appear to further substantiate. The opportunities and challenges point us to the need for a broader model of technology assessments that can account for values in human futures, and not merely the traditional issues of just safety and efficacy. So section two, cultivating robust models of technology assessment. Beyond the more narrow areas of risk assessment and analyses to assess effectiveness and economic impact, technology assessment for emerging technologies such as telemedicine should also account for broader consideration of concerns. This broader consideration, or broader conception, according to Henk ten Hove, should take into account the social and ethical consequences of these technologies, and furthermore should include an examination of, quote, the value judgments at play in recommendations and determine if and how these recommendations were not simply scientific, but also normative, end quote. Such considerations, then, must go beyond the technology itself to examine values that are underlying or inherent within the technologies, or to assess whether the technologies are justified in the light of moral values. I would note that this is particularly important in advanced technologies such as ICTs, with extensive attention given to the technological ontology and thus their value-ladenness, something that's talked about in design philosophy a fair amount. In the longer paper, I unpacked more substantially the insights of philosopher Don Ide regarding the non-neutral role technological mediation plays in transforming communication. For our purposes here, I'm just going to give kind of the SparkNotes, CliffNotes version of that. Writing in 1983, well before the internet, Ide comments about the ways in which we have become blinded to the underlying technologies that mediate and therefore transform our communication. He notes, quote, that communication occurs by means of media is such a commonplace that we rarely reflect, let alone reflect critically, upon the implication of what he refers to as a third factor, that is technological mediation, in the communication situation, end quote. Ide is intentional in noting the use of non-neutral to signal that technological mediation is not immediately good or bad, but that, quote, it is rather essentially or invariably ambiguous, end quote. So Ide raises the concern to be aware of the implications of technologically embodied situations and mediated presence, which I think has conceptual relevance for our discussion here this afternoon. It's also worth noting that Ide's larger project raises a whole host of issues and concerns, which I won't get into here, and I'm not intending to import any of those into this discussion, merely interested in the way he uses this idea of technological mediation. Beyond Ide's work, a number of others, such as John Dyer, Brian Brock, George Grant, have noted the ways in which technology creates or influences both meaning and culture. So he's not alone in this, but he's one of the earlier people to do so. More traditional approaches to the assessment of telemedicine have primarily focused on concerns such as potential and realized cost savings. And the spoiler alert is it's not an unequivocal cost savings when used as a blunt tool. The data is somewhat ambiguous on, or ambivalent on this. The improvement of assessments of quality and outcomes, again, the data is ambivalent in this area. And the area of patient satisfaction. This is one of the few areas where the data seems to actually indicate that telemedicine unequivocally improves patient satisfaction, even with more frequent, less personal interaction with care team, email management systems, or patient management platforms. On safety, we find the consideration of outcomes through technologically mediated follow-up and post-surgical remote monitoring has had some positive results, helping to identify and address emergent health concerns more quickly and nudging patients to be more diligent following aftercare instructions. Other safety considerations have primarily focused on the comparison of telerobotic surgeries with traditional procedures or interventions, and some studies have even pointed to the environmental savings potential through possible carbon reductions of telemedicine. Yet beyond these more traditional considerations, the rising integration of these technologies in the clinical encounter parallels and in many ways slightly trails popular adoption of similar technologies in the society as a whole. And with this adoption comes a rising concern about the depersonalization of communication and a loss of embodied presence. One thinks of Sherry Turkle and her work Alone Together, the very communication technologies that she and many others thought so highly of at the advent of the internet, has led to a disquieting sense that while we are more connected than ever before, many are experiencing greater senses of isolation. And others, such as Albert Borgman, have raised concerns about the depersonalizing nature of these technologies and their impact upon both relationships and formative cultural practices. Similar concerns have been raised regarding the introduction of such technologies into the clinical encounter. For instance, concerns about the depersonalization of medicine through electronic consultations has been voiced for decades, even as early as 1993, an essay was commenting that technology has stripped medicine of its humanistic qualities, even before the advent of electronic medical records. Yet even as one sees some empirical evidence, ambivalence surrounding telemedicine, it seems unclear that depersonalization serves as a sufficient examination for the sort of robust technology assessment I mentioned earlier. Here, the work of Kenneth Goodman might be informative. Perhaps not all telemedicine is created equal. Goodman notes that the World Medical Association has drawn a sharp distinction between telehealth by necessity and telehealth by convenience, and quotes the WMA noting, quote, "The patient-physician relationship should be based on a personal encounter and sufficient knowledge of the patient's history. Telemedicine should be employed primarily in situations in which a physician cannot be physically present within a safe and acceptable time frame," end quote. Additional work has been written about medicine's awkward relationship to the body, specifically a disposition to the objectification of the body. This is often depicted in some of the art surrounding medicine. So if you've seen this, where is the focus of the physician's gaze? And this has transitioned over time, okay? Something that's been well documented in the medical humanities literature. I'm also thinking of Jeff Bishop's work, The Anticipatory Corpse. If that's not something you're familiar with, I'd highly recommend it. Well, I think there are some important implications worth pursuing. I'll set them aside for our purposes here. Regardless, there is an historical emphasis in the practice of medicine on touch and the physical manipulation of the body to the closeness in both physical proximity and emotional vulnerability that physicians and other healthcare professionals have had in their encounter with patients. Here I should mention that one could further explore the broader cultural analysis on the body and embodiment as well as its entailments for human relations and communication, but that is beyond what I can do today. Does the increasing use of telemedicine portend a broader cultural shift in medicine from patient as person, as Ramsey claimed in the 1970s, to Does the increasing use of telemedicine portend a broader cultural shift in medicine from patient as persons, as Paul Ramsey claimed in the 1970s, to persons as data and information patterns? How might further developments in immersive VR and augmented reality further extend such trends? Or significant advances in remote diagnostics through medical wearables? It's at this point in the paper, the longer paper, I have a discussion of posthumanism, in particular the work of Catherine Hales, her How We Became Posthuman, where she argues that the shift from an embodiment paradigm to an information paradigm is one of the fundamental components to a posthuman worldview. Given the limited time, I'll move on. I think somebody is doing a presentation on transhumanism later this afternoon. Don't hear me suggesting that telemedicine is in any way responsible for transhuman or posthuman trends in our contemporary culture. However, I do think that a broader approach to technology assessment must consider the ways in which technologies encourage or foster potential human futures. I'll now conclude with a brief proposal of theological resources for Christian assessment. So the last section, Remaining Human in an Age of Technology by Retrieving Theological Anthropology. Beyond a more robust analysis of the ethical, legal, and social issues, one may find in a broader technology assessment, Christian ethics has the additional privilege and responsibility to bring to bear theological resources in the context of this broader analysis. If technologies that promote telepresence and virtual presence are moving us to reassess our notion of the importance of embodied relations, then it behooves us to explore what theological resources we have to assist in our analysis. the most obvious place to turn would seem to be theological anthropology. Here we can rehearse the traditional assumptions regarding human dignity, the image of God. That said, aside from debased examples of otherwise inappropriate virtual presence, such as remote-operated sex bots, instances of digital or virtual rape, violation of privacy, or otherwise the blatant disregard of a person, even if digitally mediated, it's not clear how far considerations exclusively focused on dignity and the Imago Doctrine will get us. As a result, might we consider aspects of theological anthropology that may encompass areas beyond the Imago Doctrine? Here we can highlight those aspects of theological anthropology that are often underdeveloped in Christian ethics and also bioethics, such as the theology of the body and a properly human conception of embodiment that speaks of our finitude. Before we get to the corrupting effects of the fall in Scripture, we see a story of humanity as created in creatureliness. The breath of life is in the text breathed into a physical body in God's good creation. Whatever more we are as human beings, we are nothing less than our physical creatureliness. As creation, we are created good in our limitations, in our finitude. In the words of Augustine, we are neither beasts nor gods, but rather finite creatures endowed with the image of God. Brent Waters is a notable theologian, notable exception to this, as one who has written extensively on the area of theological anthropology, and I would commend his work to you if you are unfamiliar with him. Also, I think particularly in the context of emerging technologies, with the increasing challenge to distinguish humans from the tools we make and the technologies we use, it's important that we heed the words of Leon Cass. And this is a quote from Cass. In short, being and remaining human requires that humans cling tenaciously to their finitude. In a technological age, Christians must be concerned about our creatureliness, our physical embodiment. From a theological standpoint, this is reaffirmed by the incarnation of Christ, in which our physical humanity is honored with the enfleshment of the second person of the Trinity, the Son, a point highlighted in Graham Cole's recent Biblical Theology of the Incarnation and by numerous others. To degrade our physicality, even in the face of brokenness, is to degrade our humanity. Others such as C. Ben Mitchell draw on the work of Dietrich Bonhoeffer and make an even stronger claim that there is a right to bodily life. They note, quote, our right to a bodily life is a natural, not an invented right, and the basis of all other rights, given that Christians repudiate the view that the body is simply a prison for the immortal soul, end quote. Additional work by others such as Brian Brock have developed aspects of a theology of the body in the context of Augustinian notions of gift and givenness from God. Furthermore, we could explore the potential for understanding finitude and givenness in the context of relationality and availability to others, as does Beth Felker Jones, a theologian here at Wheaton. Or we could explore, as Colin Gutton does, the connection between a Trinitarian doctrine of the Imago with what he calls the ontology of personhood that involves the whole person, including our bodiliness. Surely we could explore the ways in which this expression of the whole body is developed in New Testament theology, and the more extended paper spends time developing several of these ideas, but I need to bring this presentation to a close. To bring these theological resources to bear, even at a preliminary level for telepresence technologies, and particularly telemedicine, at the very least, should give us pause. I am by no means suggesting that this would lead to a rejection of such technologies, but broader trends toward privileging virtuality and virtual presence at the expense and replacement of embodied relations should suggest that something more significant is afoot in the way these technologies are constructing meeting. As Ide suggests in his notion of technological mediation, while good technologies may be imperceptible, there is a remainder that is lost, as well as technological intrusion that occurs in the relationship, in the communication. We must be attentive, therefore, to the cumulative effects of such technologies to our fundamental notions of what it means to be human and for its impact on human relations broadly conceived. Thank you. Yes.
So, I wonder if you could maybe think about this a little bit differently by asking the question, how could mediated presence experience, technologically mediated encounters, be used to affirm the things that are inherently important? So the analogy that I'm more familiar with is online education. So early days of online education, pretty terrible stuff. You just threw a bunch of stuff online and people watch it, didn't watch it, learn from their pajamas, and that was it. Didn't work very well, usually. Nowadays, you know, after a long experience of sort of learning what forms of online pedagogy work well, you know, you have notions of instructor presence, social presence, content presence, and, you know, if you and actually students report that if it's well designed, if you sort of follow best practices for instructional design, that an online class, you know, completely asynchronous, can be a better learning experience than a face-to-face experience if it's just a faculty member, you know, sage on the stage.
Yes.
So I mean, yes, embodiment is important. Yes, it's the person, you know, but I mean, we've all had experiences in the hospital where, yeah, there was physical proximity, but I was just an object.
Yes.
You know, and data was the thing, and yeah, and you mentioned that. So I'm just, you know, instead of thinking about technology, it has these affordances, they have these tendencies, but then also knowing that, can't we use the technology to actually to elevate the values, to realize the goals that you would want with, you know, medicine?
So and education
even do more.
Education is a good example because I think your case in point was telling. So the case often is that, yes, when we talk about online education, it has progressed significantly, but the comparative is also always the worst experience of teaching. And so to compare apples to apples, you should compare the best online experience to the best in-person experience, and no educator is going to suggest that online education is equivalent to that. So in the physician-patient encounter, we can all think of very bad experiences we've had, whether it's going to sick call or being treated as if we are merely, as I suggested, an object, right? So in that case, medicine has already shifted to this idea of the physician as a technician of data value, right? So the patient is merely something that we are quantified and measured, and that they're trying to find a diagnostic and then apply a therapeutic, an intervention, all of which is fairly impersonalized. And that has already suggested a technological shift that has been commented on in medical ethics for, you know, a couple of decades now. And, you know, as I suggested, even in 93, well before, you know, we're talking about really any of this stuff, they were talking about the ways in which medicine had become depersonalized. So I'm not trying to herald this as if to suggest that these things contribute to the dehumanization of medicine. What I'm suggesting is that a shift has occurred where we've marshaled in technological resources and we haven't considered the ways in which it enhances care and diminishes care. And that's Ide's point, is that the technological mediation, this third factor, there's always gain and loss. And the problem is that technological mediation makes it such that we forget about the loss.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're cognizant of the potential loss, then you can mitigate to
in some ways. Yes.
Because I mean, you have real issues with rural healthcare.
Yes, absolutely.
On one hand, you know, this technology is necessary, and again, the analog is sort of online education, because nobody, the model of the nice little seminar, it's very expensive and not sustainable.
That's right.
So you think about Paul with his letters, it's like, oh, I wish I could be there in present, but the letter will have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you're right. I mean, you're not going to sit, you know, apples and oranges, but you kind of need both.
And even with Paul, he sent someone there to actually,
exactly,
you know,
it's,
give
yeah,
the letter.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a mediated presence, but it's still, you know, so we read these as now disembodied communication, but they were not that initially.
Well, they're still not, because, you know, in the context of worship service, they're read and executed.
Great. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're going to end there. Thanks very much. And,